Welcome to the Fit Girl Magic Podcast. If you are ready to find your inner magic, develop great habits, and a rock steady mindset to feel confident, comfortable, and fit in your body, you are in the right place. I am Kim Barnes Jefferson, and I'll be giving you weekly doses of health, fitness, and life tips sprinkled with humor and real talk. If you're ready to be consistent without the stress of perfection, magic makers, it's time to slip into your favorite pair of PJs, grab some coffee, kick back, and listen to today's show. Okay, magic makers, today is a conversation that I have been wanting to have for a really long time. It's a conversation about alcohol. And the conversation I'm going to have is with Miss Casey McGuire Davidson. And we met on Facebook and we got to talking about alcohol, not in the everyone should stop drinking, but is alcohol really empowering your life? Or are you having more moments where you're questioning if alcohol should be a part of your life? And this is more of a big overall discussion versus girl, you need to stop drinking. You got to put down that mommy juice. So let's open up the conversation to Miss Casey McGuire Davidson. Hey, Casey, how are you?
Hey, Kim, I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. And, you know, we talked several times before this call. And, you know, I've always talked to my clients about alcohol from a health and wellness perspective, about, you know, how alcohol is metabolized in your body and how it slows, you know, weight loss. But I've always wanted to have a conversation from a life perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, how does alcohol fit into your overall life?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a really important conversation to have. And I also think that it's a really difficult conversation to have. I know that, you know, women, and I, you know, was one of these women, right? We talk about everything. We talk about diets and weight loss. We talk about new fitness routines, what we're doing. And we talk about gluten and dairy and all of these things. But for some reason, we never talk about alcohol as being a problem, as being something that we want to limit, as being, you know, we joke about having a hangover from the night before, desperately needing our girls' night out or our sippy glass, happy hour at the end of the day. But we don't talk about it in the way we talk about nutrition as
yes,
with sugar, as things we want to cut back on, but can't quite do it, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, and absolutely. And you're right, because in, if you ever were to say to someone, and I used to do fitness competitions, and I wouldn't drink for 6 months at a time. And I would tell people like, yeah, you know, I'm getting ready for a show, so I'm not going to drink. And they would look at me like I said, you know, I kill babies for a living.
I know. I mean, I remember being pregnant and would go out and people would be like, come on, you can have a glass of wine. You're in your third trimester. And I was like, no, I'm okay. And let's be clear. I was a big drinker. And in my first pregnancy, I did have, you know, the glass of wine, right? You're like, oh, French women always drink during their pregnancy. But with my second daughter, I was realizing that alcohol was a problem in my life. And I was using pregnancy, in addition to wanting the best for my daughter, also to see how hard it was for me in my second and third trimester just not to have any wine at all. And people were pressuring me when I was 8 months pregnant to drink. And I'm like, oh my God, how is this possible?
Yeah. And we all want to feel comfortable. And you thought that like once you got out of high school, peer pressure was gone.
Yes.
And, you know, it is that like if you know, even now I'll go to a party and sometimes I want to drink and sometimes I'm like, hey, I'm good with a glass of water. And it's always that, are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Right. I know. It's kind of, you know, I always say, you know, once I stopped drinking, and I stopped drinking 4 years ago, after 20 years of just a true love affair with red wine, alcohol is the only drug that you have to justify not taking. Nobody asks you why you stopped smoking, right? Smoking is inherently bad for you. Everybody knows that if you stop smoking, it's a good thing. They may not think you're a terrible person if you do smoke, but if you stop, literally everyone is like, good for you. They're not like, come on, just have one. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you alluded to that, you know, it was your second pregnancy and you were starting to think to yourself, I think I might be drinking a little bit too much for me. What were some of the, you know, things that were coming up in your mind that kind of started you thinking like, maybe I should start to shut this down a little bit?
Yeah, well, I desperately did not want to shut it down.
Of course.
I mean, I love drinking and it was a huge part of my social life, right? I was working in corporate America. I was married. I had kids. All my friends were drinkers. I mean, we used to do the wine tasting rounds and the pub crawls, you know, on date nights when we got out from seeing, got a babysitter and had dinner parties where everybody would bring a bottle of wine and it was just a great time. But I was drinking every night and I had for many, many years. You know, you come home from work, you open a bottle of wine, you have a glass while cooking dinner, a glass while eating dinner, you know, more when the kids go to bed. And I realized it was getting in the way of my goals. And specifically, for example, weight loss. And after two kids, you're trying to get in shape. And despite, you know, writing down all my food and like, okay, I had a salad for lunch and then I had a banana and an apple and, you know, eggs for breakfast or whatever it was, I was like salmon and asparagus for dinner and four glasses of wine. Right. I mean, I couldn't not drink, or I desperately didn't want to. I was willing to cut out everything else. And it was just, you know, I would put all these rules for myself, like I'll only drink twice a week, or I'll only drink two glasses at a time. And they just didn't work for me. Like if, you know, or if they did, I hated it. Like it was like white knuckling through it. And I was increasingly, you know, with my drinking, it was really, I didn't put together that it was associated with drinking until I stopped. But I was waking up at 3 a.m. with anxiety. I was waking up with a headache and, you know, a dull head. My eyes were watery. I was less optimistic than I used to be. I was more anxious. I felt like my life was really hard and my kids were really irritating. And once I stopped and got some distance from drinking daily, I was like, oh my God, I'm content and my life is good and my kids are not that difficult to deal with. And, you know, I didn't realize how much harder I was making every day of my life by drinking.
So, you know, and I'm going to really like dive down in this because so many of us come home and have that glass of wine to make life easy, to tolerate a bad day or to get through the night because of other life things.
Yes, absolutely. So common. And to some extent, what we're doing is we are using alcohol as a welcome action from the relentlessness and energy and from the monotony of housework, from going from your first job to your second job. And especially after you have kids, this ramps up, right? Because you don't have time for yoga or guitar lessons or long walks with your girlfriends. You have to rush home and you go to your, you know, second job of the family. And it is something, I mean, let's be clear, you can drink while playing Candyland. You can drink while helping with homework. You can drink while watching TV with your kids. And so, and it's addictive, right? It's literally habit forming.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Your tolerance goes up. It takes longer to get that buzz. You're able to drink more. It's, you know, you can very easily go from two glasses to three to four. I mean, very easily.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head why drinking is the kind of go-to, because I don't need to get a babysitter to have a glass of wine with my kids. I don't need to physically get in my car and drive to yoga or drive to book club. I can just go in the kitchen, open it up, and 30 seconds later, I have my release right there.
Yeah. And I mean, drinking works, right? For a long time, it works.
Right.
It shut down your mind. It does make everything dull out. It provides you a bubble where everything is it's hitting you less hard.
Right.
On the other hand, you're numbing everything.
Yeah. And
it's insidious. It's insidious. I mean, the way it for me, it just became so much more important in my life. Like I would mm-hmm. a bottle of wine and my husband would have two glasses and I would be quietly sort of upset about it.
Right. You're pissed because you're like, that's two less glasses I get.
Yeah. I don't have enough now. Now yeah. I get another bottle, which is awkward. I mean, I'd be at the restaurant and not able to completely focus on my friends and my conversation because I was distracted about, is the waitress going to come back so I can order another drink before the check gets offered? Like that was important to me. And that's when I'm like, okay, I'm starting to realize that this is taking over more and more of my mind space.
Right. And, you know, like any addiction, you know, I have clients who are addicted to exercise. I have clients who are addicted to food. You know, it could go to addiction to drugs, addiction to gambling. It all starts in this slow thing. Like it all feels really good. It feels yeah. great. I'm out. I'm being social. I'm doing all the things. And then at some point that cliff happens where the activity becomes more important than anything else.
Yes, absolutely. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing, right? I mean, we talked about this briefly before we got on, but a lot of people, there's such a label when you stop drinking. Mm. When I was a big drinker, I surrounded myself with big drinkers. I was like, what do people do if they don't drink? Do they just sit around looking at each other all night? Like how, you know, I couldn't even envision it. But the idea was if you didn't drink, in my mind, either you were pregnant or you were boring or you had a problem. There okay. was no middle ground, which sounds okay. cool, but that's where I was.
No, and I will, first of all, I just absolutely love that analogy. But I will agree with you. You know, in my past, I was a big drinker too. And you're right. You were like, if people weren't drinking, you're like, well, what do you do for what's your social life like?
If you're not, why? Like, I need to know why.
Yeah. And so when I stopped drinking and I still would go out to the same places, then you realize you're like, was I having as much fun as I thought I was having?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you realize once you stop drinking that like after three drinks, people actually aren't that interesting. They repeat themselves. They talk, but they don't remember it all. It becomes like, oh my God, you're the best. We're going to take over the world. But it's really not genuine.
Yeah. Well, because also by the next morning, I'm like, well, who was I taking over the world with? And was I taking over the world?
Yeah. And what did I say to them? And did I overshare? Because I would always overshare. But luckily, they probably don't really remember it. But it was, you know, and now that I've gotten some distance from drinking, I realized that you actually don't need to drink to have a good time. And I know some of your listeners are like, I believe you, not even a tiny bit.
But it's absolutely
like, hey, can we go out for a drink? And I'm like, sure. Because a drink means anything you want to drink. I mean, I go to bars with my husband. He drinks and I have a ginger beer or a cranberry and soda or a non-alcoholic beer or a mojito with no alcohol. I mean, you're out in the environment. You're having a great conversation. You're engaging with the world. And by the way, you wake up able to go to your 5:30 a.m. workout without having consumed that alcohol that stops all weight loss and hurts your head and all those things.
Right. And so I feel like, you know, we kind of touched on this earlier, how modern life has really turned us into alcohol seekers or release seekers, it would be the better term, that, you know, life's busy, you know, between shuttling your kids here, there, and everywhere, you know, maybe a demanding job, a demanding spouse, managing aging parents, life can come at you really fast. And so for many, alcohol is that pause button. Mm-hmm. for them to press. And so if I'm that person who I'm like, girl, I need my wine. What's the conversation that you have, like, you know, with a client who's like, yeah, I really, really need my wine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what I do as a coach is I work with women who've decided that alcohol isn't working in their lives anymore or right now. So a lot of us have never taken an extended break from drinking. I mean, I hadn't from the time I was at least 18 to when I quit at age 40. So essentially what I say to them, if they're thinking, I'm stuck, I can't achieve my goals, I've tried to do this on my own and I can't make this shift, is give yourself a chance to know how good you can feel with some time away from drinking. If you're doing 4 days and 7 days or 2 weeks or even dry January or sober October, you are doing the hardest part over and over again. So I really encourage women to set a goal like 100 days, which I know sounds crazy, but trust me, you can do it. And the reason that goal is helpful is you literally can't white knuckle it. You can't. You have to build up other ways of self-soothing, other ways of treating yourself, other interests. I really didn't have a lot of interests that didn't include alcohol. Like, I would be annoyed if we were going to a party that was alcohol free. I was just like, what are you doing? Why don't, this is ridiculous.
You can't spring for a bottle of wine? Come on.
Like, it was just crazy. But what you enable yourself to do then is to actually tap into your emotions. If you don't, you know, for me, I drank when I was happy to make myself more happy, when I was connecting with someone to somehow heighten that, when I was angry, resentful, bored is a big one. When they're bored, they drink when they're anxious. And instead, you go about your life, you're like, I'm lonely.
Yeah.
I'm not drinking because I'm lonely. What do I actually need? How can I solve for that emotion? I'm anxious, same thing. I'm feeling happy and I want more. What can I do? Because we really sort of stunted our coping mechanisms when we start drinking. And it's this hammer that we use for, you know, everything in our life when you actually just needed, you know, a smaller tool, a better tool that will actually feed your soul without just numbing you out.
Right. And I want to go back because you said a couple of things. First of all, you said when you were trying to stop drinking, you came up with rules, right? So you told yourself it was only going to be two drinks tonight, or it was only going to be, you know, wine, or, you know, whatever your rules were. And I feel like many of us fall into that bucket. It happens with food. Oh, today I'm only going to eat, you know, red food. You know, yeah. No red. You know, if it's red, I'm eating it. Or no gluten today. Or no. And like, you make these like hard and fast rules. How does that ever work for anybody?
It does for a period of time. And you probably see this both in fitness and in nutrition. But you can't, if you are just sort of trying to hold on really tight and limiting things, it's not going to be sustainable in the long run. Because, I mean, you know, there's a saying that, like, you know, if you're controlling your drinking, you're not enjoying it. And if you're enjoying your drinking, you're not controlling it. And my husband used to say to me, you know, and we got together when we were like 22 and have been married for almost 18 years. And he was just like, you don't have an off switch. Like, it's gone or until you fall asleep. Like, those are the two options.
Right.
It was true. And so it took me a long time because I was trying to control it so much because I didn't ever want to get to the point where I had to stop, both because of the label, because of what I thought it would do to my social life, because I was worried about what people would think of me if I quit. Step back. That's a really crazy way of thinking about it, but it's so prevalent in our society. But also I was like, how am I going to get through, you know, I mean, my gosh, we're in, you know, a time where everybody's locking down with their family. Like, oh my God, I'm going to be trapped with my kids for 2 weeks. How can I possibly not drink? Like, you know, I need that. Right. And so that was all the things keeping me stuck. And until I actually had someone to hold my hand and coach me, just like a nutritionist does, and personal trainer, about how to build up your running and your weight training and do it in a way that feels good and where you don't, you know, get overwhelmed, then I was able to change my habits in a way that was really positive.
Yeah. And I like exactly what you said there, because we do, we make all these rules, we make all these deals with ourselves. Yes. And, you know, and how many times, you know, do we make the deals? Like, this is the week. No, this is the week. And it literally can snowball for years and years that this is the week that you're going to get your shit together. And so I love how you said 100-day journey. And how did you pick 100 days?
Yeah, well, it's tied in two ways. One, it's, you know, it takes longer than 30 days to.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you know, how long would you say it takes to sort of institute a new habit?
You know, it's so funny because for years, everyone said, oh, 21 days and you'll have a new habit. Bullshit. I want to say if you're a slow learner, I tell most people, give yourself a good 90 days, you know, and I would say 30 days is you like tripping and falling and stumbling. And then like the second 30 days is you figuring out like, okay, oh, I went to the right. That didn't work for me. So I'm going to go left and I'm going to keep going left. And then by the time you kind of figure out your navigation, you're in the last 30 days where you're like, okay, I'm starting to feel like this feels okay. And where I like, if you went to 100, that last 100 is like you proven to yourself, you got this.
Yeah. And it takes that long to start feeling really good. And to feel capable and to feel proud. I mean, it happens pretty quickly. Within 14 days, people are usually, they're sleeping better. Their skin is looking better. They're less puffy. They, you know, the first 14 days, you're usually pretty irritable. Anyone who tries to go a week without drinking will tell you you're pretty irritable.
Like, oh God, yeah.
You're not sure what to do with yourself. It sort of feels like you're walking around without your extra layer of skin, like your nerves are all exposed a little bit. But once you get past those first 14 days, then you've also gotten past your first 2 weekends. So, you know, by the time you get to 30 days, sometimes you're, you know, I really recommend people give themselves what I call sober treats every day in the first week, then every other day. Because when you're stopping drinking, it should actually feel like it's the kindest thing you've done for yourself and you're actually treating yourself better than you ever had before. So get yourself a pedicure on a Friday after work. Get takeout sushi instead of cooking dinner. Buy yourself flowers at the grocery store instead of a bottle of wine. Buy yourself a diffuser and essential oils and put it in your bedroom and cuddle up with a great novel instead of working with your wine bottle next to you after work. It's really about actually taking care of yourself versus numbing out to tolerate your life. And a big part of it too is we set up our lives, and I'm talking all modern women, whether you're stay at home or you go to work or you don't have kids, in a way where we're people pleasing, we're overachieving, we're doing everything we can to make other people happy so that we kind of get that gold star and people think we're capable and you get the next promotion. And you're not setting boundaries or tapping into how you actually want to live your life and what makes you feel content and sort of be able to breathe as you move through your day. And when you're not drinking, you're actually sort of forced to do that. You're forced to kind of say no, because if you get overwhelmed or you take on too much, you're gonna feel like you're quote unquote driven to drink. So you kind of have to give yourself timeouts. And that's actually really wonderful. I wish more women would do that, but it's a psychological mind shift, right? And you kind of have to say, gosh, saying no is really uncomfortable. Setting boundaries is really uncomfortable, but I finally did it and I survived, right? They were sort of disappointed and life went on and it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's a very, very, very good point there. You said it's the people pleasing, right? And so it's like, I don't want my kids to be disappointed, or, you know, if you're caring for aging parents, you know, I want to make sure that they still have the same quality of life. So that means I might have to take a step or two back in my life in order to make sure that everyone else around me is happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't feel like you can bring in help.
No.
You know, you're like, when I talk to clients, they're like, I can't say no. I can't not do that. I can't not take care of my mother, you know. And of course, here's the basis. Your mother has to be taken care of, But you can bring in reinforcements. You can hire a babysitter so you can go to a yoga class or you can go for a walk. You can ask your partner to step up so you can go to your room and read a novel and then you can do trading off. And that's just something we're not used to. And a lot of times when people are like, I just don't have the money to take care of myself. You know, I was a daily drinker. I drank a bottle of wine a night. Some people would cringe and be like, oh my God, that's crazy. And I bet a lot of your listeners are nodding their head and being like, yep, that sounds about right.
Yeah, I agreed. And, you know, you and I had this conversation offline is that I have a client who her vice was marijuana. And she's like, I came home at night and I smoke a joint. And everyone looked at her like, oh my God, like she was doing heroin. And it's legal in a lot of states. And, yeah, you know,
here in Washington state.
And you tell me that you down a bottle of wine a night and I'm like, you go girl, what kind of wine you drinking? And yeah. If I tell you my vice of escape is marijuana, you're like, whoa, like you're hardcore.
Yeah. Like you do that around your kids. Oh no, well, at least I hide it. Okay. And you're downing a bottle in front of your kids.
But right.
Like doing that shift of what you can and can't say no to. When I quit drinking, I saved $550 in the first month. No joke. Like I calculated it. Mm-hmm. Quit for 4 years and I know I've saved over $24,000.
Oh, absolutely. If you think about
it. And hire a babysitter. I mean, it's physically possible to get some more help, to buy yourself flowers, to take a yoga vacation, which I've never done before I quit drinking, to spend that kind of money for myself. And it's amazing. My life's gotten so much bigger since I stopped drinking and since I overcame that fear. And I don't label myself. I don't, you know, say I have a disease. I don't say I'm powerless. I don't feel like that, you know, I don't use the term alcoholic, but I do say I used to drink a lot. It wasn't good for me. It's an addictive substance. I stopped and I feel so much better. That's what I believe.
And I like that approach because, you know, you're right. Like nowadays, like, you know, we're now in the society where like, you know, you can have like your own personal pronoun. So I feel like, I think because there is such a stigma, if I say I'm an alcoholic or if I say, you know, I use drugs or anything like that, people are like, oh my God, something's wrong with you. And they back away. But if you say, if I told you that, you know, we talked about smoking, if I told you like, you know what, I don't really eat bread anymore. It just doesn't work for me. I overeat it when I eat it. And so I'm just not going to eat it anymore. And no one would look at you funny if you said that. And so I think what you just said is a smart way of kind of for the listener checking in with themselves and asking those questions. Like, you know, can you go 24 hours without a glass of wine? You know, do you make these rules? Do you make these deals with yourself around alcohol? And at the end of the day, is alcohol enhancing your life? Or are you, like you said, waking up in the middle of the night, having more anxiety? Are you, you know, losing track of stuff more than just having mommy brain?
Yeah. And little things for me were starting to slip. And, you know, but I was working so hard to make sure that no one noticed, right?
Right.
But like make sure before I had my third glass of wine that the coffee was made and the alarm was set and my workout clothes were out. And, you know, you name it, knowing that I would get pretty fuzzy at the end of the night and knowing that I probably wouldn't do all those things if I sat down on the couch with, you know, my third or fourth glass.
Right. So, you know, there's
so hard.
No one likes to, this isn't really talked about, but there are, I don't even know the number, but what we call functional alcoholic.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that anyone listening to the show is an alcoholic. Maybe you are, and maybe that's what you need to do. That's great. But just because you can drink and you can function still doesn't give you the license to be like, nothing's wrong. You know, this conversation today is like, my goal is like, I just want to open the door, you know, because a lot of this is happening behind a closed door. I want to open the door. I want you to walk in the room and say, you know what? Does this room fit me?
And in my mind too, like I don't, you know, yes, functioning alcoholic, that is a term. And if the term alcoholic helps you, if it helps you sort of draw a line in the sand and say, I no longer mess with alcohol at all for this reason, I support you. But I actually don't think, for me, for a lot of women, that using the term alcoholic at all, functioning or not, is helpful. Mm-hmm. Because it's a label that has a lot of negative connotations and it doesn't add value. Like, it doesn't matter what you call yourself. It, you know, you're a, you know, if you quit smoking, no one's like, oh, I'm a nicotineaholic for the right. My name's Casey and I'm, you know, a nicotineaholic, whatever. I mean, it just doesn't matter. You say, I used to smoke a pack a day and I don't anymore.
Right.
Because guess what? It's not good for you and it wasn't good for me. So when you're able to do that, when you're saying, hey, I drink a lot, but, and I'm going to take an objective look at what it's bringing to my life versus how much harder it's making it, that is all the information you need
to yes.
have a period of time without alcohol. And by the way, nothing is wrong with you and you are not alone. Nobody talks about it, but there are thousands and thousands of doctors and nurses and lawyers and stay-at-home moms and really successful people who are waking up with a hangover every day. I promise you.
Absolutely.
It's a slippery slope. It is mm-hmm. not your fault. You know, between no. societal pressures to, I mean, there is a reason to drink or an invitation to drink or a reminder to drink every single day between advertising, your friends, social media, colleagues, everything in the world is encouraging you and telling you that to be a modern, empowered woman who is taking a little time for yourself, that equals alcohol.
Right. You know, it's like put on your wine and put on your heels and be, you know, the woman of the 2000s.
Yeah. You're not trapped by your children. You are as good as the man in the workplace. Therefore, get your mommy juice. Get your mommy's time out wine. There's actually a wine bottle named Mommy's Time Out, which I don't, you know, I can't get any clearer example of what they're trying to target you to do.
Right.
Going out with the men, get a gin and tonic. You're sophisticated. Get, you know, all these things that are signifiers for who you are trying to be. And it's a lie and it's keeping you stuck and it's keeping you small. It's keeping you, I mean, honestly, alcohol is keeping us pacified. So that we don't demand more, so that we don't demand that our micro get aggressions that we experience in the office place are resolved versus drinking to push them down, so that we don't demand help at home when we are doing 80% of the work, so that we don't demand that we have time away from our children, which honestly, every human being on the planet needs.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not a bad mommy if you want to have 2 hours a day to yourself. Like that's
no,
not-
you're going to be healthier and happier, and so are your kids.
Yeah. So one of the other things that, you know, we talked about, if that's something you feel like you're like, okay, I'm checking in, you're saying some things that happen to me a lot, and I'm thinking I might need to kind of try this 100-day experiment here. But what about, you know, for those of us, we live with the mommy. And, you know, we might see it, you know, we might see the end of the night where, you know, you aren't so steady on your feet. And there is a pause between how are you, you know, basic, you know, conversation. And there's like, you know, a little pause between your response back. You know, is there a conversation to have around that?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely is. And you know, this hits close to home because even though my husband never told me that I needed to stop, there was sort of a loaded just aspect to our marriage and to our family life at the end. Like, for example, I used to hate it when I would wake up on the couch. He would tell me that he wouldn't be able to wake me up. And I would have to come up in the middle of the night and he would have the door shut to our bedroom. Like that was sort of a cringeworthy moment. In the morning, depending on the day, you know, he would ask me, so how are you feeling? And I'd be like, in my mind, like, what a jerk, you know, but I'd be like, I'm fine. I'm fine. I would, you know, I'd be opening a second bottle of wine on a Tuesday night. And he would be like, really, Casey, like, what are you doing? And so all those little things, even though they were difficult, they stayed with me, right? I remember every one of them, and I knew. So I would say, if you know someone, if you live with someone, if one of your best friends drinks too much, approach them, say something, say it with love. Say, you know, I think that, like, how do you feel? Like, what is this bringing to your life? I know you think you need it. I know you think you love it. But is there something else that could be more for you? I would encourage, if someone says, because we all do this, those of us who drink too much, if someone says, do you think I have a problem? So many people tell you, no, no, you're fine. I mean, sure, you overdo it sometimes, but maybe just don't have the third glass, or, you know, because you don't want them to quit. I mean, a lot of us surround ourselves with drinkers. We want them to keep it in control, but we actually don't want them to quit, because what would that mean for your social life? How would that change your relationship?
Right.
If you drink too much, what does that mean about you? Will you still go out to the bars together? So if someone actually says, I'm worried about my drinking, or I think I need to cut back on my drinking, or do I have a problem? Oh my God, that is so hard for them to say. And don't dismiss it. And don't just tell them to cut back. Ask questions and say, why don't you try a bit of time without alcohol? And guess what? I'll do it with you. It'll be great. We'll have a health kick. Let's do 30 days. And then encourage them, you know, instead of meeting at a bar, say, let's get brunch, or let's go for a walk. I mean, let's get coffee. There right. are so many things you can do that aren't centered on dinner at a restaurant or happy hour at a bar. But if someone gives you that opening, and trust me, I've done it many years before I quit drinking, if they approach you, like, don't brush them off. And, you know, just be like, yeah, great question. You know, and I think that's the most. The other thing I would say is there are so many resources out there for cool, smart, social women who've decided that drinking isn't working anymore. And if anyone's interested, I actually have a guide on my website that's the Sober Girl's Guide to Quitting Drinking, 30 tips for your first 30 days. And I literally tell you what to expect on day 4 and day 7, what podcasts and books are centered around women without labels that are so empowering and exciting, ways to think about mental shifts, about thinking about not drinking, that are not punitive and don't have labels, and some things that you're going to want to keep in mind in terms of how to tell your coworkers, how to tell your friends, how to tell your spouse without a way that traps you into thinking about never again, just in a way that says, I'm taking a break. And, you know, I need your support. So here's what you can do for me. So, you know, if someone's interested in that, please check it out.
Yeah. And we will for sure link that up in the show notes. But I really liked what you said. It's kind of like letting that person know that you're there, you support them. You're not saying that it is a problem and, like, you know, Betty Ford is coming to sit on your couch in 5 minutes. You're just saying, hey, like, how do you feel about what I'm telling you? Like, how is this landing with you? And, you know, just how you talked about, you know, your husband with the door shut, like, you're like, oh shit. Like, that was a subtle sign.
Oh, it wasn't so subtle.
No. But you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't in your face saying, girl, you got a problem. But when you saw that, you're like, shit, he doesn't like my behavior.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, you know, it's the death of a million cuts. I mean,
right. Exactly. So I'm sure, you know, if you're listening to this and there are those door shuts, or you are waking up on the couch, there are these little things that you might just have to be asking yourself, how many times did that happen to me?
Mm-hmm. And honestly, you deserve better. Like, I know you don't believe me if you're listening to this, but you are going to be so much happier and healthier, and you'll be able to move forward in your life. You won't be in this groundhog day of saying in the morning, I need to take a break. I'm not going to drink. And being like, God, do I have time to stop for a bottle before I have to pick up my kid at daycare?
Like, oh yeah,
is the worst.
Mm-hmm. And you know, any addiction, you know, be it exercise, food, shopping, we all have those same crazy thoughts that it's like, I know I'm supposed to be, you know, picking up my kid at 5, it's 4:30. Do I have enough time? Is there going to be a line? Can I, you know, run in and run out?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the same thing with gym, you know, like I know it's supposed to be at 4:30, but could I like get in a quick 20-minute workout before I need to be there? So it's what I'm trying to say is that we all have our own vices. We can pick or choose whatever our vice is. It's alcohol, it's exercise, it's food, it's shopping, it's gambling, it's sex, it's whatever. Everyone has something that helps them to get that release. And the conversation today is check in with yourself to see if you're doing okay, if you're bypassing and just focusing strictly on that behavior that may not be serving you right now in your life.
I think that's so powerful. And I love that you focus on women, you know, in their 40s, over 40, because I feel like that's the time in our lives where we've been so busy, like building the house, building the career, getting married, having kids. And you get to a point and you say, why aren't I happy yet? I thought it would be easier by now. I thought I would have gotten to a place where I can relax. And the hits just keep coming, you know, where of course you have more responsibilities and your kids require more. And your parents now need you. And it's so easy to numb out and to not think about yourself. And that's when you really need to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why I wanted to have this conversation, because I do see, you know, my 40-something friends, my 40-something clients getting trapped between, you know, their teen kids and their aging parents. And who wins? You know, everyone has needs but you. And you just put yourself in the back seat because you've been in the back seat while rearing kids. And so my hope is that, you know, through this podcast, through this conversation, women start to realize that you can say no, you can put up boundaries, and you're not being a bitch.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. On my website, I also have a guide. It's called The Nice Girl's Guide to Saying No Without Feeling Like a Slacker or a Total Bitch. I mean, what you said just completely resonates with me, because, you know, as a raising my hand as a people pleaser and overachiever, it's so hard and yet so good.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. And, you know, I tell my clients this all the time. I'm like, no is a complete sentence.
Yes.
And yes. It's very hard. It's very challenging. But it's like, the more you try to like contort yourself to other people, then you're like, all right, I can do it. I can do it. And then it gets there. And then you're pissed that you said yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't realize it. But when you say yes to everything, you're saying no to yourself, even if you don't know what you want to do with that time. Not a hell yes. It should be a no, because you're not giving yourself the opportunity to even think about what you want for yourself.
Yeah. And one of my main questions I always ask, you know, my clients, and I know the clients who are listening are going to roll their eyes. I always, I'm like, all right, you know, you're working hard, you're dieting. What the hell do you want? And like, oh, I'm so busy to think about that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but you're spending, you know, all these hours worrying about, are you doing the right thing exercise wise? Are you eating the right things food wise? But you're not even taking 10 minutes to think about what the hell you want.
Yeah. And it takes some time. I mean, when I start working with clients, I do, after, you know, the first 2 weeks are over, I ask them, what do you love more than wine? Or what do you love more than whatever your drink of choice is? And a lot of times they say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And so I talk to them about, there's this lull between no longer when you're drinking for every emotion and just to numb out, and not yet, which is when you sort of follow your divine breadcrumbs to joy and happiness and exploration. And you kind of, that time between no longer and not yet is so important, because you have to create that space for things you love to come into it. And it's natural and it's really hard to sit with.
Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, because we have been bypassing our feelings for so long, just to sit in our feelings makes us uncomfortable.
Yes, yes.
Very uncomfortable. And so, you know, this has been like such, it's been the powerful conversation that I wanted it to be. You know, in my head, I was like, there's so many places we can go. And this has been great. Like, we talked about all the things that really, as a 40-something year old woman, we got a busy life. Life is coming at us really fast right now. And as Casey alluded to, you know, we always thought that by now, maybe it was the career you wanted to have. Maybe it was the relationship you wanted to have. Maybe it was the house. You know, we all grew up with the thought of like 2-point-something kids with a dog and, you know, a white picket fence. And maybe that's not your life right now. And maybe you're still thinking like that's going to come. But as Casey and I both alluded to, press pause right now and decide, where do you want to go? Where are you driving your bus? What's going to make you happy? Because that's where you're going to truly find your happiness versus chasing what you thought you wanted when you were 25. Because that girl, she's gone. She's grown up. She's
thought that would make you happy. You've gotten there and you're like, actually, this wasn't what would make me happy. This is following the prescribed path. And now I'm scared to jump off.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I've had a conversation about dating. You know, you married your college sweetheart, your high school sweetheart, and then you're like, he ain't all that in a bag of chips. So what do you do now?
Yeah. And this stuff is scary, but you can't figure it out. You know, if you're drinking too much, you can't figure it out. You can't get clear enough and you're blaming yourself for everything. You have so much self-blame. I mean, I used to wake up and walk down to the kitchen and look at how much wine was left in the bottle. And what I would say to myself is like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Get your shit together. Why can't you pull it together? And, you know, it was the alcohol. That was the issue. And when I eliminated that, everything else got easier. My anxiety went away. Any depression went away. My ability to feel like I couldn't cope went away. My ability to stay with weight loss, to stay with working out, to actually take joy in my relationships. And I'm not saying that will happen for everyone, but I would say that if you have a fixation on alcohol and haven't been able to moderate and are feeling this way, it's something that if you try it, if you experiment, you will be amazed at the areas of your life that will get better.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And that is like the perfect sentiment to close on. I want to thank you so much for this like honest and frank conversation. And as Casey alluded to, you know, if alcohol is, you know, you're thinking like, maybe I should think about this, download her 30-day program and, you know, take the 30 days and take the 30-day, you know, mini challenge and see how that works out for you. And then see if you can take it to 60 and then finally do that 100-day journey that she talked about, or contact Casey directly. You know, as she said, there are no labels. So don't feel like you have to label yourself a this or that or that. Just be like, I'm a person who chooses not to drink. That's the label. You've made a choice, you know, just like the person who chooses not to have gluten anymore, right? That's your choice. So I want to thank you so much. And all the links we talked about in the show will be in the show notes. Casey, where can they find you in the socials on the internet?
Yeah, absolutely. So at Facebook, Hello Someday Coaching, there is a page. And on Instagram, I'm at Casey M. Davidson.
And then one last question before I let you go. What is one thing that makes you feel magical?
Well, I would say not drinking. I feel like my sobriety is the foundation for everything I want in my life. And, you know, I always say, you know, even if you have a bad day, even if you really are frustrated or aggravated, you know, joy always comes in the morning, just waking up and smelling the coffee, because I'm a little addicted to coffee too, but I am not eliminating that in my life.
Oh, no, no.
You know, regardless, every morning waking up, not having that 3 a.m. dread, not saying what the fuck is wrong with me, not having watery eyes. I mean, it is amazing. And I am grateful for that.
Awesome. I love all of that. And so thank you so much, Magic Makers. You know, this conversation wasn't about saying you have a problem. It was just asking you to be honest with yourself, just like I asked you to be honest with your fitness level. You know, if we don't ask ourselves the honest questions, no one will. Well, thank you again so much, Casey.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Fit Girl Magic Podcast. If you've made it this far, yay. I'm thinking you enjoyed the show. Let's continue the conversation on Instagram. You can find me at Kim Jefferson Coach. In order for me to keep sharing this message, do me a favor and leave me a 5-star review on iTunes. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe so that you won't miss an episode. New episodes are available every Wednesday. The Fit Girl Magic Podcast is intended to provide you with tips, tools, and strategies that will help you make better decisions about your health. I really appreciate your feedback and your support. Thank you so much.